When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 95, The Conquest of Chile, part 3. When we left off last time, Valdivia had just fought the indigenous peoples of the Santiago area and driven them back away from his settlement. What's more, a ship had just arrived with new soldiers and supplies. His settlement was in ruins, but things were now looking a bit more positive. So far, his attempt to colonize Chile had been marked with trouble and difficulty. Now, though, he could start to think about consolidating and expanding. He began by sending a small group north to establish a new settlement in the Copiapó Valley. This was the point where you could either continue north to Peru, across the Atacama, or cross the Andes into what would become Bolivia. Assuming that other Spaniards moved into the area on the other side of the mountains, this would make Copiapó an important transit route. While travelling by sea was quicker and easier, assuming that Chile flourished, it would need to be properly connected by land to the rest of the Spanish Empire as well. Not wanting to spread his colony out too thin, Valdivia chose a place called Coquimbo to found his new settlement. It was two-thirds of the way up to Copiapó, and as he instructed the men he sent to found it on the coastline, it would provide a useful staging post for both land and sea travel. All going well, from there they could expand further up into the area where that mountain pass was, and eventually into the rest of northern Chile. He sent 30 of his Spanish troops, and things seemed to have gone well. The town they founded will become the city of La Serena. That winter was a cold one in Santiago, and the Peruvian viceroy sent a ship to sell Valdivia supplies at inflated prices. Presumably, he also wanted to get an idea of what was going on down there. Although Chile now appeared to be independent of Peru, if things looked promising, the idea of trying to return it to Peruvian control must have occurred to him. Valdivia succeeded in convincing the merchant sent with the supplies to join him instead and to use his ship to explore the coastline to the south of Santiago. So far, they had found that the further south you went, the less arid it got and the more fertile the land. They knew about Magellan's trip through the straits at the very bottom of the continent, so they would have known that the land there was cold and green. While they would have probably still hoped to find precious metals and large civilizations, they had probably come to terms with the idea of making good farmland their primary aim, and the information they had suggested that southern Chile could be just that. Valdivia wanted to move on and claim it before anyone arrived from Spain to do that before he could. This also marked the point where Valparaiso started to transition from being simply the nearest point to Santiago where ships could land into a proper port settlement. The merchant I mentioned a second ago, Juan Bautista Pastene, set off from Valparaiso, and at the same time, another group started to march overland. The oceangoers sailed for 13 days, landing at a potential port they had identified and naming it San Pedro. Pastene conducted a ceremony in which he claimed the land for Valdivia and Spain. The indigenous people seem to have simply observed this and done nothing more. Presumably they couldn't understand what he was saying. Then Plastene sailed back to Valparaiso to report on what he had found. As well as exploring, the land expedition's job was to gather up the indigenous people who had fled the Santiago region. Successfully fighting them off had been necessary when they were attacking the Spanish. And while they didn't want the leaders organizing resistance, they did now need the population so that they could be made to work on the farms which were being established. They were successful in bringing large numbers of them back. Valdivia also sent three of his men to Peru with some of the gold they had obtained from their mine. In truth, it wasn't producing much, but he hoped that it would paint a positive picture and encourage more people to come and settle in his colony. He felt that he was now making progress. Santiago was secure and could start growing. With his boats and his new settlement, the north and his connection to Peru was taking shape, and with his explorations along the coast of the south, he felt ready to expand down there as well. It was the south which he really cared about. It was there that he saw the most promise. He began organizing a force to march out and incorporate new territory into Chile, but he had to delay things for 3 months because a horse fell on his foot and he needed to recover. Finally, he set off, but as soon as he cleared the boundaries which the Spanish had already established, he faced fierce resistance. If he had thought that Michimalongo and the people he'd met so far were hostile, what he was about to face was even worse. He was entering the lands of the Mapuche. The Mapuche are one of those indigenous civilizations, like the Maya the Montejos had faced in the Yucatan, who will be a constant thorn in the side of the Spanish Empire. They were particularly determined not to lose their sovereignty, and adept at both fighting the outsiders off and preserving their cultural identity. Today the Mapuche are still proud of their survival and hostile to outsiders. They still practice their culture and resist Chilean incursions into their lands. They regularly demonstrate against the Chilean government, and sometimes some of them even burn down the properties of non-Mapuches which have been built on their land. They see these Chileans as just the latest wave of colonists, which started here with Valdivia, and some argue that the war against them, which he started, has never ended. The Inca had the same problem. They had managed to conquer roughly the same territory as the Spanish, but when they attempted what Valdivia was now attempting, they were drawn into a fierce battle with the Mapuche, which ended in stalemate. Their southern border never extended past Valdivia's current one. Valdivia pushed onwards, fighting off constant attacks. Interestingly, one of his commanders was Michimalongo. He had spent some time up in the mountains after the Spanish had driven him away from Santiago, but he had apparently missed home and decided to accept their rule if it meant that he could remain in his home territory. Recognizing his ability, Valdivia had agreed to accept him and persuaded him to assist in this attack. They faced their first big battle when they reached the Biobío River. The Mapuche attacked at night. It looked for a while like the Spanish might lose the battle, but eventually they managed to regroup and drive their attackers off. The Mapuche had correctly identified the Spanish horses as one of their key strengths, but decided to try to turn this into a weakness. They aimed for the horses with their arrows, and the Spanish were forced to dismount. The Spanish also discovered that the Mapuche had developed complex battle tactics. They didn't just rush forwards. Instead, a commander organized their units and reacted to events as they happened. They had a system of commands which were given through horns, meaning that each unit could easily be given new instructions as the battle went on. As well as the horses, they are said to have specifically targeted Valdivia. Once they had repelled this attack, Valdivia decided to found a new settlement at a place called Penco. It was on the coast, at a location where a large bay allowed ships to come and go. It was also supposed to be an excellent spot for fishing, which could help them sustain themselves. Today, it's basically a suburb of the city of Concepcion, but for the rest of this series, I will continue to refer to it as Penco. They knew that they would face attack, fiercely and probably immediately. So the first job was to start building defences. Within 8 days, they had constructed a rudimentary stone wall. That attack came about 20 days after they had chosen the site. The Mapuche arrived, and supposedly they had an enormous army of 80,000, although this is probably a gross exaggeration. I think we can say that it was a big army, however, and they are said to have come prepared with ladders. Valdivia's plan was to use the walls, to stay behind them and not risk coming out at all. But one of his captains persuaded him that while this should be their plan, they would stand a better chance if they also conducted horse charges as well, and to do so while it was still light. This worked, and they managed to force the Mapuche back. Valdivia is said to have been extremely brutal with the prisoners he took. The Spanish themselves were surprised that the battle had not been harder, and a number of myths grew up around it. A couple of different Christian figures were supposed to have miraculously appeared and scared the Mapuche. These stories may have some sort of basis in the fact that a meteorite did appear in the sky a few days before. It's possible that the Mapuche took this as an omen, and that it unnerved them. A week later, Pasteni arrived with 2 ships and 50 soldiers, and so the colony was reinforced. Valdivia decided that this was a good time to go back to Peru. He wanted to present his achievements to the rest of the Spanish Empire in order to try to confirm his position as governor of Chile and to obtain more supplies and reinforcements. He arrived at a delicate time. The politics between various different factions there, largely Pizarro's children and the king's representative, were coming to a head, and this complicated his mission. He ended up getting caught up in this dispute, and he found himself the target of one of these groups. The precise details of this politicking are a bit hazy, and as they are probably complex and only partly connected to the story of Chile, I don't want to get too heavily into them anyway. What we need to know, however, is that Valdivia was briefly arrested, with the charges against him being related to his relationship with Inés Suárez. According to the Catholic morality which governed behaviour at the time, he was definitely committing a sin. It wasn't really very moral by our own codes of behaviour today either, let alone those much stronger ones of the time. His wife was sitting in Spain while he lived with Suárez. The court ordered that his wife be brought over from Spain, and that Inés be married to somebody else. She doesn't appear to have had much choice in the matter. And when Valdivia returned to Chile, she was married to one of his commanders. She had apparently been aware of what was going on, and paid for a lawyer to represent Valdivia. This seems to have helped him beat the charges against him, but not the ones related to their relationship. This is the end of her part in our story. She lived the rest of her life in Santiago, and was one of the most important people in the Chilean colony. Her new husband would serve twice as its governor. Valdivia's wife would never see him, for reasons which we'll get into later. She will also live out the rest of her life in Chile.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The concessions around his private life seemed to have been enough to appease those trying to prosecute him. He was released and allowed to return to his colony. It's not clear if he obtained the reinforcements he was looking for, but he did manage to secure his control of the colony and gain the title of governor. While he was away, his control was solidified in another way. De La Hoz attempted to take advantage of his absence to foment more resentment against their leader. At the time, he was living in exile, on his own about 20 miles from Santiago. This was because he had been caught trying to organize another assassination attempt. Valdivia should probably have come down more harshly on him for this, but he didn't, and so now the troublemaker was making trouble again. Some of the colonists were concerned with the speed at which Valdivia was moving. They worried that he was expanding too fast, spreading things too thin and making the colony vulnerable. Valdivia had also been stingy with the small amount of gold they'd managed to mine. He wanted to take as much back to Peru as possible to give the false impression that there was a lot of it down in Chile and attract more colonists. This had caused some resentment amongst those already there and involved in the mining, because they believed they should have been allowed to keep a larger share. Seeing an opportunity, De La Hoz ignored his exile and started trying to turn some of the dissatisfied Spaniards against Valdivia. He secretly tried to gather a network of followers who would agree to join him in a rebellion. Luckily for Valdivia, one of his loyal commanders discovered the plot before it could get off the ground, and De La Hoz was arrested. Despite his two assassination attempts, and now his rebellion, who knows if Valdivia would once again have been lenient if he'd been there. His commander, however, saw that De La Hoz would probably never stop plotting, and he had more than enough legal grounds to react with force. He held a trial in which De La Hoz was found guilty and had him executed. De La Hoz's story has one interesting and unexpected legacy. That initial charter he'd been given by the king, but which he never took up because of his inept handling of his rivalry with Valdivia, had technically given him the rights to colonize everything south of Peru. Today it is this charter which Argentina and Chile used to make their claims to Antarctica. When Valdivia arrived back in Penco, he found it flourishing, and with the latest Spanish rebellion sorted out, Valdivia was feeling confident, judging the settlement to be secure. He started organizing more onward movements. Pasteni would go by ship, while a small group would explore by land. After the last battle, the Mapuche seemed to have decided to regroup, and so both of these expeditions came back with reports of good land and no attacks against them. Valdivia was impatient, but he recognized that he couldn't campaign properly over the winter, which was just arriving. He did, though, send more expeditions to brave the rains and floods and explore the immediate area. Pasteni sailed south again to the place where he'd been welcomed on his last trip. This time, however, in part because of his bad behaviour on that last trip, he was attacked when he came ashore and forced to retreat. When spring arrived, Valdivia began a new campaign. Before starting out, he called the local caciques to a meeting and promised them that he meant them no harm. He told them that it was a good thing that the King of Spain was taking possession of their land. They didn't buy it at all, but pretended to accept what he was saying. Then he went south, and fending off plenty of small attacks, he chose another site to build a fort. This was all he seems to have achieved that year, as he returned to Penco to wait out the next winter. He wasn't just waiting for the weather to improve. He was also keeping an eye out for ships with supplies and reinforcements, which he had requested from Peru. These came and provided him with 100 more soldiers. They also brought good news. The king had a favourable impression of what he was achieving, and had instructed the governor of Peru to recognise this. This meant that he was unlikely to face any more trouble from up there in the near future. On top of this, more men were marching southwards, and although they were on the wrong side of the Andes at the time, they were already roughly level with Santiago. Valdivia went back to his southernmost settlement, where the men he had left had been finishing off the fortifications and ensuring that the local people did not attack them. Things looked good down there. The land was better than in Santiago, and it appeared for now that the indigenous peoples were less hostile than those they had encountered up in the capital. For now was the most important part of that sentence. Valdivia began dividing the area up into encomiendas. Apparently those who had already been given them further north, previously happy to have been given land quickly, felt like they now had an inferior deal. Some petitioned him to swap their encomiendas, one of the new ones around Penco. His enthusiasm would not last. Valdivia instructed the men coming south from Peru, on the Argentinian side of the Andes, to pause there before crossing the mountains, and to found a settlement. He wanted it to become part of his colony. They bumped into another group of Spaniards, however, sent by the governor of Peru to do the same thing. The resulting dispute turned violent, with two battles taking place between the countrymen. Valdivia's supporters came out on top, and the Peruvians were allowed to continue founding their settlement, but obliged to run it under Valdivia's ultimate command. As soon as his men continued onwards into Chile, however, they abandoned their new town and founded a new one, claiming that this one reported to Peru. Valdivia, of course, rejected this and picked a captain to control the area. But despite claiming that it was his, in actual fact, they couldn't spare the men to actually occupy it. So the two claims will coexist for the immediate future. The dispute will rumble on in the background for quite a while, but eventually Valdivia will prevail. Meanwhile, he was preparing to continue his push southwards. With Chile's long, thin shape between the mountains and the sea, and its well-irrigated land, now that the deserts of the north had been cleared, the most obvious way of dividing it was the succession of rivers which ran down from the mountains in the east to the sea in the west. These neatly divided the territory into sections, which were used to mark Spanish progress southwards. But they also provided defensible frontiers for the indigenous people. The next river which cut across their roof southwards was the Tolten, and here the Yiche people, a subgroup of the Mapuche, had set up their defences. The Spanish were prepared for a battle, but once they crossed they found that the resistance was not significant, and they were able to continue. They found evidence that there may have been silver in the region, and also received news that those men coming from Peru, having thought that they'd resolved the dispute about northwest Argentina, were on their way now. So Valdivia paused where he was. Soon those reinforcements arrived, and almost immediately after that, the Huilliches made two big attacks, both of which were unsuccessful, and this pretty much ended their campaign against the Spanish. Continuing onwards, the Spanish reached the Calle Calle River, at the mouth of which they found another great natural bay which would make an excellent port. They decided to found another settlement there, which they named after their leader, Valdivia. He then sent a small group to found another one further inland on a lake and in the foothills of the Andes. He named it Villarica, the rich town, because the Huilliches said that there was an abundance of metal which could be mined there. This turned out to be true to a certain extent, but there wasn't as much as the Spanish had hoped. The town will prove to be useful, however, as it sat at one end of those all-important passes through the mountains, and so it will end up being a staging post for a new route, which will connect southern Chile to Buenos Aires, although that's in the future. Then Valdivia explored a little further south, probably reaching the northern coast of the island of Chiloé, before returning to Penco for the winter. Overall, things were going well. His colony was much bigger and more secure than it had been at the start of this episode. In fact, no matter what happens next, he had established a foothold in Chile, from which the Spanish will now not be dislodged. That same drive which had inspired him to undertake the colonization of Chile, against the advice of everyone else, still possessed him, however. He was impatient to finish the job, and it appears that he would not be happy until everything south of Peru belonged to him. In the first episode of this series, we saw how he had sold his land in Peru and his mine in Bolivia to fund the expedition to Chile. Now, in order to speed the colonization process up, he sold the encomienda, which he had given himself in Santiago as well. Being the leader, presumably this was among the best and most valuable pieces of land in Chile. His aim was to reach the Straits of Magellan, thus bringing everything south of Peru on the Chilean side of the Andes into his governorship. You would guess that, given his ambition and his attempts to bring parts of northern Argentina into his colony, that from here he hoped to eventually expand it to include the much larger land on the eastern side of the Andes as well. If he had succeeded, today's map would probably look very different. If you've enjoyed this episode and you feel like doing something to help, one thing which makes it easier for new people to discover the podcast is to leave a review wherever you get your podcast from. If you really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling generous, it is possible to leave a small donation. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done one of these things. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.